From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 612, Azure Sphere with guest Galen Hunt, recorded Tuesday, September 25th, 2018. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Dr. Galen Hunt, who's a distinguished engineer, managing director of Azure Sphere, and founds and leads the Microsoft team responsible for Azure Sphere. Azure Sphere provides an end-to-end solution with the goal to ensure that every Internet of Things device on the planet is secure and trustworthy, and his research areas include operating system security and technology disruptions. Additionally, he is a member of the launch team for the Microsoft Research New Experience and Technologies Organization and was a principal researcher of the Operating Systems and Distributions Group. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I always love it when folks that are part of Microsoft Research turn into product people. That's got to be pretty cool for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I've gone back and forth. So I've been at Microsoft 21 years, right? So I've actually...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, this is actually depending on how you count it, this is my third or fourth time that I've left Microsoft Research to go do something in one of our product organizations.
That's a very unusual researcher. I don't know that everybody gets opportunities like that to get to a place where your research project turns into enough of a product that you join it.
We don't have as many people do that as I'd like to see do it.
In the past, I've interviewed Don Syme, a fellow involved with F-Sharp. Uh-huh. And of course, he actually stayed with MSR, but still is heavily involved in the evolution of F-Sharp. So it's cool to see that same sort of thing.
Yeah.
IoT is such a huge topic. Can you sort of give me the introductory level of what are we talking about when we talk about Azure Sphere?
Okay, well, the key thing to start off with Azure Sphere is it is targeted at what for Microsoft is an entirely new swim lane, which are microcontrollers. Or MCUs, I'll probably mostly call them MCUs, abbreviated as MCU state.
Okay.
And MCUs, MCUs are the single chip computers. So on a single chip, you have processor and storage and flash, you have RAM, you have IO capabilities on a single chip, and usually for a price point that's just, a cent to a few dollars kind of thing.
So, is a Raspberry Pi sort of a big version of this?
Actually, a Raspberry Pi is larger than an MCU.
Yeah, that's what I figured, yeah.
So, if you look at a Raspberry Pi, the board has, there is a SoC, a system on a chip, there's a main chip, and then there's also externally, there's RAM is on a separate chip, and flash storage is on a separate chip, and if you have like Wi-Fi, that's on a separate chip as well.
And so you're talking about literally all of that is one chip. So something the size of your thumbnail and it's everything?
Yes. Smaller than my thumbnail.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, literally all of that is on a single chip, smaller than the thumbnail.
That's impressive. Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about microcontrollers is they're everywhere. We sometimes refer to them as the dark matter of the computing universe because they're pervasive. They're everywhere. And yet... Because most of them, the vast majority of MCU-based devices are not connected to the internet in any way or have not been. So they're not yet IoT devices. Because of that, well, we don't even know that there's compute there. And I'll give you, my simple example. So MCUs are in everything from toys to home appliances to industrial and office equipment. An easy way to describe it, if you see something and it has a status light.
Right.
But it doesn't have a color LCD, okay? Because if it's got a color LCD, it's Raspberry Pi or big. But, no color LCD and it's got a status light, it's got a microcontroller in it.
Right. It's an MCU.
Yeah. So for example, you walk around your kitchen, your fridge has got one, your stove has got one, your dishwasher has got one, your toaster has got one, et cetera, et cetera.
And do we want to put these things on the internet? I mean, what are the consequences of that?
So the answer is yes, we want to put them on the internet. In fact, really, the companies that make those devices really want to put them on the internet.
Right.
I'll give you a really simple example that I use all the time. So So let's think about a refrigerator. And how do you know that the compressor on your refrigerator is worn out? Okay. Well, today you know because you come home and you got spoiled milk and melted ice cream.
Right.
Okay. Because it actually broke, and then it had consequences of destroying what was inside it. Okay. But in a connected world, instead you would know because you get some kind of a message from the refrigerator manufacturer saying, hey, you may have noticed your fridge is making a funny noise. That because their compressor's worn out, we'll have a technician in your neighborhood this evening that has the right part. Can they stop by and replace that part and so your compressor so that you don't experience any loss?
Nice. So more of that preventative action because the fridge calls home and lets it know when it's in trouble.
Yeah. And there's all sorts of things, you know, preventative action. There's a telemetry, then being able to see, you know, how do our refrigerators work in different environments? How could we better make the refrigerators? There's things about, you know, to help you as you like get ready to buy a new refrigerator to point you, you know, which one might be a better fit of their product line based on which features you use,
right,
or, you know, that you actually use as opposed to say you use, you know, things like that. Being able to order you automatically a new water filter when it's gone. Okay, so there's all, basically, connectivity totally changes the relationship between the device manufacturer and the end user of that device.
You know, I have a couple of Nest thermostats, and that monthly email telling me how much heating and how much cooling, and just that sort of sense that you know what's going on with it. You see, you could see that with every appliance in my house.
Yeah, absolutely. So these really profound changing experiences that happen when you add connectivity, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the driver. That is what is going to cause every device manufacturer on the planet who builds MCU devices to want to add connectivity to them. Now, you did ask the question, do we really want to do that?
Is this a good idea? Yeah. What are the consequences?
So it's a good idea, but then on the other hand, it's a horrible idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the horrible idea part of it is that these MCUs, because they're so small, they have very limited compute capabilities. And the existing MCUs, the ones that are put in products today, none of them have any kind of security to speak of. Okay? So if you took your dishwasher right now and connected the internet, any hacker who wanted to could take over your dishwasher and own it.
Right.
Okay?
Well, we've already seen exploits like this around smart light bulbs and things and just not good Wi-Fi security. And, you know, it's not that you can do much to a light bulb. It's that the info you get from that leads to access to the whole network.
Yeah. Well, and it turns out, actually, you know, if you had, you know, some forms of epilepsy, for example, you could certainly use a light to trigger a reaction in someone. I mean, there's
sure.
all sorts of things you could, you know, but I have friends who are really serious security hackers, and just about anything that you think is totally harmless, they can figure out some way that it could not be. Anyway, so this is the challenge, right? And in fact, this is kind of the origin of the Azure Sphere project. Was 4 years ago, somebody walked into my office with a spec of a chip that was then under development, which was for the very first time that I had seen a programmable microcontroller, an MCU, and on that same chip, a Wi-Fi implementation as well. And, you know, so for a couple of dollars, you could take anything on the planet and turn it into a connected device. And then I started realizing what the security implications of that were, given the state of the art of MCU technology. And that led to an investigation where I basically said, oh my gosh, there's this future out there where devices, the MCUs, there's 9 billion MCU-based devices that ship every year right now.
Okay.
Basically, none of them are connected yet. But, you know, imagine this future where there's over 9 billion new connected MCU-based devices being shipped every year, a future that's very, very, very close. And while those things aren't secure, that's a nightmare. Everything on the planet that is physical control has an MCU in it.
Yeah, so once we start going down this path of connectivity, well, I'm also thinking 9 billion more devices, like you can only NAT for so long. I think IPv6 is pretty much essential.
Now, you can NAT for a really long time.
We have been.
Yeah, well, you could put trillions of devices behind NAT if you wanted to. But anyway, so this led to Azure Sphere. And so what Azure Sphere is it is an end-to-end solution that allows any device manufacturer who's building MCU-based devices to build MCU-based devices that are also connected and highly secured.
Okay. So how?
How? That is a really good question. The how is there's three technical components of Azure Sphere.
Okay.
And what I'll tell you is a highly secured device needs secured hardware, it needs secured software, and it needs cloud services to help it remain secure over a long period of time. And so by that, you would infer, well, if we're building an end-to-end solution, that, well, in fact, it has all three of those components. So we have Azure Sphere MCUs. Now, these are a new class of MCU, haven't existed before, but they're out this year. But these are new MCUs that have security, what we call a hardware root of trust, from Microsoft built into every single one of these chips. And so with the hardware root of trust and some other aspects of what we do with these chips in the way these chips are constructed, they create a secured hardware environment. And those chips are built by Microsoft's partners, silicon partners. So we're out engaging with a number of companies or through the silicon ecosystem for them to build Azure Sphere chips. So the second component is the software, and that's the Azure Sphere operating system. So this is the operating system that runs on these chips and creates a secured software environment.
Now, is this a version of Windows?
No, it's not. So we're in a much smaller device than, say, Windows IoT would run in.
Right.
It's a new operating system that we've created specifically for IoT and for highly secured device. It's a four-layer defense in-depth operating system. The second layer of that operating system is a custom Linux kernel that we've customized, optimized for security and for IoT.
So not to put too fine of a point on it, Galen, but are you telling that Microsoft makes its own version of Linux?
That's what I'm telling you. Yep.
It's a strange world. Strange, strange world.
It is a wonderful world in which we are able to use technologies from wherever they come from to provide the best solutions for our customers.
That's awesome. Okay. Yeah.
And by the way, so you might ask, well, why did we choose to use a Linux kernel there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'll give you the quick answer to that. Quick answer for that is that for two reasons. One, because it is a high-level operating system. So it's, you know, like Windows as well, but it's got processes and it has software security, which we've significantly enhanced beyond what core Linux has. But then the second reason is actually because it's open source.
Right.
Okay. The silicon ecosystems for MCUs are very, very different from the silicon ecosystem that we have in the PC world. So in the PC world, we have two, and depending on how you count it, three silicon providers that provide our core chips that our OS runs on in the Windows space, right? Intel, AMD, Qualcomm, basically.
Right.
In the MCU space, there are scores of silicon providers that provide MCUs.
Wow.
Okay, and if we're going to support all of them, we can't do it in the same way that we support Windows on silicon. We have to do it a very different way. We have to do it in a way that allows the silicon manufacturer to actually be able to take our operating system and go customize it for the features that are enabled in their chips. Now, they then give those changes back to us and we incorporate them into our overall operating system. We have to, like, we call it self-enablement. We have to allow them to go enable their chips themselves. And that requires having an open source kernel.
Now, at the same time, you are talking about this root level security too, so they can do their own implementation but maintain this high level security. How does that work?
Yeah, well, what happens is, I talked about it being a multi-layer operating system, mm-hmm. and the chips have lived this feature that we call defense in depth. And what that means is there's actually software running underneath the kernel. There's a piece that we call a security monitor that protects the overall platform, and then there's pieces that run above the kernel as well. And they all work together to basically keep the kernel secured and updated. The other key thing is that we create the kernel binaries that run on everybody's chips.
Okay.
So the silicon partners are collaborating with us effectively. Through open source, they're collaborating with us. But ultimately, we have responsibilities to make sure that the kernel remains secure and is updated on all the devices, regardless of which silicon manufacturer produced them.
That's really cool. And it does make for an interesting scaling problem, too.
Yep.
And Galen, I have to interrupt you for just a moment for this very important message. You're the SQL Server person in your shop. You never really asked for the job, but you were the one standing next to the SQL Server when it broke. You want to learn to make SQL Server faster and more reliable. Brent Ozar is here to help with online training, and they're on sale this month for 75% off. Go to brentozar.com to learn more. And we're back. It's Richard Campbell with Run As Radio talking to Galen Hunt, Distinguished Engineer, about Azure Sphere. So they're able to do their own implement via open source, but is there some kind of certification process that they go through with you?
Yeah, they go through a CHIP certification process, and it's critical to recognize that we still ultimately have responsibility for the operating system. So
Right. The
kind of almost way to think about it, at the driver level, they're creating the drivers and the other things to enable their CHIP, and then they're giving those drivers back, and we're packaging them in our OS and create the package that actually runs on the CHIP.
Yeah, it's almost got that app store-like effect then, that you sort of get a chance to look at everything, validate everything, and then hand them back the package.
Yes, exactly right. And in fact, it's a good way to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to describe it as saying, you know, the silicon manufacturers are going to do the work to enable their chip. And then they're going to give the changes that they make to the operating system, they're going to give them back to us.
Right.
And what is known in the open source community is a pull request. And we're going to take that pull request and we're going to integrate it back into our master build. And we're going to vet it for quality to make sure it meets our quality bars. And if it doesn't, we're going to work with them to bring it up to quality bar. We're going to make sure that it's got the right security, that they haven't somehow broken security or introduced any flaws and vulnerabilities. And we'll work with them to take care of those issues. But we're not going to vet it for business model or do we think this is a good feature or anything. You know, we're going to let them innovate however they want.
So we've talked about the first two pieces. Should we talk about the third piece?
Yes. So the third piece is the cloud side.
Okay.
So, you know, we've already talked about the chips and we've talked about the operating system and now the cloud side. So the third piece of the Azure Sphere solution is the Azure Sphere Security Service. And this is a cloud service that runs in, you know, Azure. And all of the chips connect to all the devices that are built that are running Azure Sphere chips and the Azure Sphere operating system. They connect to the Azure Sphere Security Service. And it helps them remain secured over time.
Right.
So as new exploits come out and everything. And it does three critical things for the devices. It brokers trust. So it uses a technology called certificate-based authentication. So like Azure, you know, Active Directory type thing. But it does certificate-based authentication so that none of these devices have passwords, but we're able to still, without having passwords, securely control which devices an Azure Sphere device connects to and which cloud services and how it does that actually connects.
Right.
Second thing that the security service does is provide software updates. So it renews security. So as there's security threats or other newer ones that emerge, we'll actually update the operating system and through the security service push new updates out to all the devices. And then the third thing that it provides, a feature we call online failure reporting, and it uses this to monitor the entire Azure Sphere ecosystem for new emerging security threats. So if someone starts attacking an Azure Sphere-based device, it will notify us and provide data that we can use to figure out how to mitigate against this type of attack.
Now, this is a conversation I've had with the Office 365 folks, too, that you guys sitting up on that catbird seat of Azure means you see the attacks in the corners long before it spreads to everyone else. So you get a chance to respond before most people will ever even know the attack has happened.
That's exactly right. You know, and even in the absolute worst case where, say, an attack blooms really quickly, we still, through this service, we have the ability to get failure reporting information we have so we can figure out what's going on in the attack and how to address it. And then we have the update technologies where we can push out to the devices the appropriate updates to mitigate and respond to that threat.
Now, maybe this is a little too far down in the weeds, but are we talking about private keys being burned into each MCU that are unique? Are we going to have a key crisis when these billions of devices need to be secured?
So that's part of what we do. I'll explain it this way. So each Azure Sphere chip, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, it has a hardware root of trust.
Right.
The name of that is the Pluton Security Subsystem. Okay. And that hardware root of trust actually generates, the device generates its own private key. It's actually the device that the chip does. So the chip, when it's in the silicon factory, it generates its own private key.
Okay.
And buries it deep inside the silicon and does it in such a way that it's completely inaccessible to software, the private key. Okay.
Okay.
But it's controlled by the hardware root of trust. And the hardware root of trust then in the silicon factory gives the public key, the corresponding public key, to the security service. So we already established a trust relationship between the chip and the security service when the chip is still in the silicon factory. And then, and it's that trust relationship that we then build upon. So before that, even when the chip gets put into a device to establish a relationship with the device manufacturer, and then later when the device gets bought by someone to create a relationship between that. And all the management of all that key, those keys, those public keys, is all done by the Azure Sphere Security Service.
So essentially the vendor, it's transparent to the vendor. They don't have to deal with it. It just happens.
Yeah.
You're handling it all at the cloud level.
Yeah. There's a very small amount of work. There's a step where they do what we call registration, where they register that a particular chip has been put into a device that they're building, but we provide them even a service to do that with.
Right. These MCUs, do they have enough horsepower then, plus with Linux, to run .NET Core? Is this going to be available to sort of the traditional Microsoft developer?
They actually don't.
Okay.
They're even smaller than .NET Core. They're very, very small. So the very first chip, the first one that's coming to market, the MT3620, which is a chip made by a company called MediaTek, that chip has 4 megabytes of RAM and 16 megabytes of flash. So it's way too small to run, you know, even .NET Core. And just the Linux kernel that we run on it and our operating system, we really optimize it for this very, very small space. But on the positive side, and the nice jump off from this, is these chips have been, you kind of allude to, I think in talking about .NET Core, you're alluding to the fact that these microcontrollers have been very onerous to program.
Right.
And they have one-off tools. If you've ever programmed a microcontroller, the way I typically describe it is, they are very well grounded in the 1970s. Okay, in terms of development technology.
Yeah.
And what we've done with Azure Sphere is we've worked with the Visual Studio team and created a full Visual Studio-based development environment for these Azure Sphere MCUs.
That's cool.
So you get F5 deployment and live debugging and everything else. The response I generally get the first time that someone uses an Azure Sphere dev kit, an MCU programmer, they're just in shock at what the amazing development experience we've brought to them is.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, they've been starving in the desert. Anything, you know, saltine and above is an improvement, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Living in studio is a big step up for a lot of folks. That's a pretty a big hit. But I appreciate that these are small now, but Moore's Law still applies. I'm sure there'll be more horsepower coming if we need it.
Yes. Yeah. And the first chip has 5 to 10 times the power of an existing MCU.
Right.
So they're pretty powerful chips. They're just really small compared to a phone or a PC.
And I found off the Azure Sphere site the link to pick up a copy of the development kit US edition. It's $85. So that's not a huge amount of money to be able to experiment.
And that's an actual dev board and the tooling that goes with it. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So these are available now. You can start experimenting immediately, essentially.
Absolutely. Experience the future today.
Well, we've had so many of the small computers, but this definitely seems to be a different class. Do you see this bringing what appears to be generalized computing to the appliance market across the board? Is this actually going to reduce the cost of the appliances?
Not in the short term.
Okay.
And we expect it to be price neutral in the short term.
Something like a Nest is a very expensive thermostat, but you get a beautiful device with all of these great, you know, cloud IoT type features. But to see more appliance manufacturers start to get into the space, the challenge for them has got to be actually dealing with that sort of UI side and how people interact with their appliance.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, obviously, if you think about it, like it's interesting because connectivity doesn't necessarily, in the case of a Nest, yes, connectivity came with also a significant change in the user interface.
Sure.
I expect actually in the MCU space, a lot of the first devices ultimately the first generation of devices that have connectivity, we won't see huge changes in the user interface. It will be more changes in the user relationship to the manufacturer,
right,
and the manufacturer's relationship to the device.
Well, the idea that the manufacturer will ever hear from one of their products again after it's sold has got to be an innovation all by itself. I think for the most part, they only hear it when the customer calls.
It is a revolution. Okay. It is this really very powerful revolution that is going to shake through many industries.
I don't want to call this threatening, but it does sound like this is a non-trivial task for an organization to understand. You're now going to be hearing from all of your products routinely, and expectations are going to go up from the customers that they can and should expect great things from this.
Yeah, they can and they should. Great things. And, you know, the beautiful thing is, yes, it's got a threatening aspect too, but far more important is all the promise of it.
Yeah, the opportunity.
Yeah, you know, I've been out talking to device manufacturers in this MCU space for a little over 2 years now, and every single device manufacturer that I've talked to has been excited about what the possibilities are this brings to their products.
Like, you are solving a problem they have not been able to solve.
That's right.
That they actually want to know. You know, I've got some nice appliances in my house, and I would love it if they called home and I was told when they have a problem before they actually have a problem. Like, they're headed down that path of failure before they fail.
Absolutely. I give you that fridge example. The way I often will describe it is, you want to own that fridge, and everybody I've ever talked to wants to own that fridge, the one that reports in instead of having spoiled milk. And your refrigerator manufacturer wants to sell you that one.
Right.
Every refrigerator manufacturer wants to be the one that sells you that.
Because it's going to be a premium product.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a premium experience.
Right.
The way I'll say it is, this is going to happen to everything.
Sure.
All these devices will be connected.
Now, I've dug pretty heavily into the smart grid and so forth. And one of the proposals was this idea of, you no longer tell your dishwasher, wash the dishes. You tell your dishwasher, make sure the dishes are cleaned by 6 a.m. tomorrow, and then it negotiates for the best power price to decide when to actually wash the dishes. Is this part of the path here?
Yep, part of what's available with connectivity.
Mm-hmm. It's now just this idea that it can actually look at power costs or see that we've got enough wind blowing right now that we can take power off our windmill, those kinds of things.
Yeah, all of that's possible.
One hand, we can talk about the maintenance side and the, you know, superior user experience side if you're just, you know, loving your appliance. But if we think about the more broadly, all of these things start to fall into place.
Yeah. So we're here, you know, the 1st of October having this conversation.
Sure.
Last week at Ignite, we had one of our partners that's been working with us, one of the device manufacturers is a company called Eon. They're the largest energy producer in Europe. And, you know, they're super interested in this for exactly the ability to be able to control the devices and manage the home energy, the energy footprint of homes based on being able to control when things happen and having that connectivity into the home.
Yeah, I've certainly appreciated my Nest telling me, you know, how much heat's going where and when and whether or not it's efficient or not. The idea that we could, you know, go beyond the Energy Star certification on our appliances and actually get a routine report from our appliances about how they're consuming power and what it's costing is interesting to me, but I'm a geek.
Yeah. Well, and for everybody else, it'll, you know, hopefully it'll kind of just become a fact of life. They can ignore the reports if they want to, but have it that change in their life.
I've been reading about how that Energy Star rating did get people to select more efficient appliances. This is just the next level of that in a lot of respects.
Yeah.
Well, Galen, exciting times. What's coming next? What's the call to action here? What should we be doing?
Well, we just entered public preview, and then you already kind of alluded to one of the most important things of that, which is, when I say public preview, what I mean is we have public preview of the Azure Sphere Security Service, public preview of the Azure Sphere Operating System, public preview of the Azure Sphere Tooling Environment for Visual Studio, and public availability, as you alluded, of these first Azure Sphere development kits. So people can go buy a kit today, and they can start looking at, you know, experiencing Azure Sphere, looking at building things that they might build based on Azure Sphere. So there's a call to action to do that. As we see the year unrolling is moving toward general availability. And we already, you know, we have companies that are beginning to We expect by Christmas to have the first devices that are based on Azure Sphere actually deployed out in the world. So lots of exciting stuff to come.
Absolutely, yeah. Great time to start experimenting if this is something in your bailiwick. And definitely this security-first mindset. So a lot of folks that struggle with that with IoT. This is an interesting approach to sort of make that problem go away.
So one other thing I should mention, we have a paper that we published actually over a year ago called The 7 Properties of Highly Secured Devices. So at ak.ms/7properties, 7 the number. And it is a framework and a way to explaining device security to people who aren't security experts.
Fantastic. I will include that in the show notes.
And also, these devices are going to be everywhere. And you're either going to have devices that are secured or not secured, and you really don't have secured devices. And so I encourage everybody to go read that paper and become familiar with, you know, what are the requirements for secured devices so that as they're building devices or they're buying devices or recommending devices, that they're doing one, that they're looking for devices that really are highly secured.
Excellent. Dr. Galen Hunt, thank you so much for coming on Run As.
Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.